Hello, I'm Kyle Caldwell, and this is On The Money, a weekly look how to get the best out of your savings and investments. While plenty of column inches are at the moment being devoted to who'll be the next James Bond, ahead of the next film in the franchise, in the investment world, bonds have also been proving popular of late. And in fact, one particular bond, a UK government bond, also known as a gilt, has attracted more money than any investment available to Interact Investor customers each month since June 2023. Joining me to discuss why this gilt and a couple of others have been selling like hotcakes for approaching a year now is Sam Benstead, our bond specialist at Interact Investor. But first, Sam, let's take a step back. Could you explain what a bond is and also why they are attractive for income-seeking investors?
Of course. So a bond is a loan made by an investor to a borrower. The borrower could be a company, or in this case, we're talking about the UK government and the gilt that it is issuing. They pay a fixed coupon, which is split into two payments during the year. And these bonds are traded on the secondary market. So you can buy and sell them as well if you weren't invited to participate in the auction, which most small investors aren't. And also when they mature, they repay back their principal. So in the case of gilts, this is a £100 payment per gilt. So because they're traded on the secondary market, it means that you can choose to hold these bonds to maturity, or you can sell them before they mature as well. So that's one of the key differences between owning a bond and owning a fixed rate savings account product. It means you can actually get out of the investment if you'd like to. In terms of how they compare to equities, they sit higher up in the capital structure of a company. So if the company goes bust, then the debt holders are more likely to get their money back than the shareholders. But on the other hand, you're not owning the shares of a company, so you're not participating in most of the upside if the company does well. And the dividends that shareholders are entitled to are different to the coupons that a bondholder will get.
And the other point of note is that bonds are generally lower risk than equities, and they also have a lower correlation with stock markets. So by having some exposure to bonds, this helps you have a more diversified portfolio, which helps to reduce risk. For much more on how bonds work, there's lots of educational content on ii.co.uk. Much of it has been written by Sam, so do check that out. And Sam's also recorded a couple of educational bond videos, which can be found on Interact Investor's YouTube channel. And when it comes to sizing up bonds, the main things to consider are time, the interest rate, the issuer, and the economic environment, with both interest rates and inflation being key things to bear in mind. And we'll come back to both those things later on in the podcast, how interest rates and inflation influence the bond market. And it's also important to remember, like any other asset, the higher the yield, generally the greater the risk. So if you see a bond that has a high yield for a company or for a government, then they are deemed more risky than other bonds with lower yields. So for example, you'd expect bonds issued by emerging market economies to have a higher yield than a developed market country, such as the US and the UK. And in order to determine the risk of a bond, bond ratings agencies play a very important role in bond markets. A little like grading homework, rating agencies assign a rating to a bond based on its credit worthiness.
That's right. But when you're investing in gilts, the credit rating is not something you really need to worry about. The UK government has never defaulted on its debt, and it probably won't ever in the future. So you're pretty certain that you're going to get your money back when you buy a gilt.
And the other factor that influences what the yield on a bond will be is the life of a bond. So generally speaking, bonds that have a long lifespan, say 20 years, they'll typically have a higher yield than bonds with a shorter lifespan of, say, 5 years. And the reason why is because the higher yield on offer for those, it's called longer duration bonds, that's in order to compensate investors for investing for a longer time period. However, the trend has been for investors to look at gilts with a shorter lifespan. Could you explain why investors have been doing this, Sam?
So the big theme we've seen in terms of what bonds people are actually buying is that they're owning gilts that are maturing very soon. So within a couple of months or a year or 2 years, And that tells me that they're buying them and they're holding them to maturity, because they can look a year or 2 years into the future and say, actually, this is when I needed my money back. I'm happy to put it in that gilt and then collect the bond's principal when it matures. So in terms of what gilts people are buying, the most held by quite a margin is called TN25. So that's the stock market ticker for this gilt. And that 25 refers to its year of maturity. So that matures at the end of January next year. The other very popular one has been T26, so that's the ticker, maturing in January 2026. And then one called TG24 actually matures next week on Monday, the 22nd of April. And we expect to see a lot of the money that is paid back when that bond matures actually reinvested in bonds maturing in the next couple of years. So those TN25 and T26 bonds, I think, will continue to be popular. Another pattern we've seen is that investors are buying TG61. So this is a longer dated bond maturing in 2061. And as Kyle was saying, these longer bonds have got a high duration. That's the sensitivity to interest rates. So that's been a very volatile bond. When investors think that interest rates are going to fall, that bond can shoot up in value. And when investors think that interest rates will rise, that can fall quite a lot in value. And in terms of how popular that bond has been, it's up 28-fold the amount invested in it since the first quarter of 2023. It was issued in the summer of 2021 when interest rates were at rock bottom and the yield on it at the time was only about 0.3%. It now yields about 4.5% on an annualized basis for investors holding to maturity.
And when it comes to bonds, there is sadly an awful lot of jargon, some of which Sam will be explaining later on in the podcast. But in terms of the ticker, so the name of the bonds, it can be quite instructive in a lot of cases. So for example, TG61, that reflects the year in which the bond matures, so 2061. And in the names of each gilt as well, the coupon is also spelt out. So Sam, could you talk us through why you think it is that gilts, particularly short duration gilts, have been outselling every other investment on the Interactive Investor platform? This includes obviously the US technology giants, the likes of Nvidia. It also includes some very popular funds and investment trusts, the likes of Fundsmith Equity and Scottish Mortgage. I mean, this is in terms of volume rather than number of buys. But, you know, I think it is very interesting to see a lot of money go into gilts at the moment. Is one of the main reasons down to the fact that gilts are exempt from capital gains?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's just fascinating that we have a gilt as the most popular investment in terms of net flows of money moving into it at the moment. You'd never would have thought that a couple of years ago or even a year ago. So yeah, there's two reasons in my view why these gilts have been so popular. The first is quite straightforward. So that's just the yields on offer. So about 4.5% from these gilts maturing soon. And that beats inflation. So you're getting a guaranteed return from the government, beating inflation. That's not a bad deal. You can't really complain too much about that. And that is attracting a lot of people to them. But I think the most significant reason is that gilts offer investors a really interesting tax break. So with gilts, the income to the coupon you receive twice a year is regarded as income by the government. So you pay your marginal income tax rate on that. But interestingly, the capital gains associated with gilts, that's if you buy or sell them at a profit or when you actually get the principal back on maturity and lock in a capital gain there, there is no capital gains tax to pay on that transaction. So that makes them very, very interesting for investors that might have maxed out their ISAs and are looking to get a nearly risk-free return with their remaining cash and also minimizing the tax on it. So that's the theory. In practice, how does that all work? I think we should take a worked example of TN25. So that's this bond that a lot of people own and matures in January 2025. So it's got two coupons left to pay. It's got one on the 31st of July and it's got another when it matures. If we look at the yield to maturity figure of this bond, according to Refinitiv, it's 4.6%. So that's an annualized figure. That means you'll get returned 4.6% if you were going to hold that bond for a year, assuming the coupons are reinvested and you hold the bond to maturity. So if we adjust that 4.6% figure for how long the bond has until its maturity, which is about 300 days, then you get to about a 3.7% return if you're going to invest in that bond now and let it mature in your account. So looking at that return, most of that, in fact, the vast majority of that is going to come from the return of the £100 principal. So the bonds currently cost about £97. To get to £100, that means around a 3% return from capital gains on maturity. And then the rest, that 0.7%, is going to come from the coupons where you're going to pay income tax. But on that 3% return, there's no capital gains. But on that 3% return, there's no capital gains tax to be paid. So this is just an estimate of returns and does not include the transaction costs that you might be charged for buying and selling the gilts. But I think it just shows how powerful it is. Because if you're an additional rate taxpayer, you have no savings allowance. And if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you only have £500 that you're allowed to get from a savings account if outside of an ISA. So it just shows how attractive returns from gilts are, especially for investors that are paying a lot of tax.
And of course, we've seen the capital gains tax allowance become less generous over the past couple of years. So the annual allowance is now £3,000, and that's down from £6,000 in the last tax year. And prior to that, the allowance stood at £12,300. And as Sam explained, due to the allowance becoming smaller, investors are now having to plan ahead more and take steps to avoid being stung by capital gains tax. And gilts are a useful tax planning tool, as Sam mentioned, for investors who have used up their ISA and SIP allowances. So Sam, as mentioned, when investors are looking to potentially buy a gilt, there is a lot of jargon. So what would you say are the key things to consider, and how can investors untangle the jargon?
Yeah, there is a lot to get through, and we've got many explainers on our website, but I think there's a few key points I get across here. So the first is that the ticker, the name of the bond, so that's what you're going to type in on Interactive Investor when you're trying to find that bond. So you're going to see something like TN, which stands for Treasury Note. It might be TG, Treasury Gilt, but you're really just looking for that T something and then a number, and that number is when the bond is going to mature. It then takes you to the full name of the gilt if you were going to search for the instrument, and you're going to see something like, and this is TN25 here, United Kingdom 0.25%, 31/01/2025. So that date at the end, that's quite obvious. So that's just the date that the bond matures. And the 0.25%, that refers to the coupon the bond pays. So bonds are split up into £100 blocks for retail investors. And when they're issued, they come with a coupon per £100 gilt. So that one, 0.25%, that just means 25p. So each gilt you own will pay 25p, split into two payments a year. So when that bond was issued, it issued at just below that £100 rate. And actually the calculated yield to maturity for investors at launch was 0.28%, so just above that 0.25% coupon. Yields are another thing that investors should get their head around. So there's two key yields to look at. The first is the income or running yield. So this is just based off the price of the bond and its coupon. So because the coupon is fixed, but the price of the bond can change on the secondary markets, then you're going to get a different income or running yield depending on what price you pay for the bond. So for example, if this £100 bond's price halved to £50, because you're still getting that fixed 25 pence coupon, then the income yield is actually doubled because you can buy two bonds for that £100. So you're getting, you know, two coupons for the price of one effectively. So that income yield will have doubled for you. The same is true on the reverse. If the bond's price goes up, then your yield has fallen. But this doesn't account for the gains and losses of when a bond matures and returns the £100 principal. For that, you need the yield to maturity figure. And this is the total return figure for the bond, assuming you hold the bond to maturity.
I mentioned earlier that two big influences on the bond market are interest rates and inflation. So Sam, over to you to explain how much of an impact they have.
Yes, so this is crucial in determining what happens to bond prices. So bonds offer you a fixed return until maturity if you own the bonds. But like I said before, they're traded on the open market. So market forces will determine what investors are willing to pay for these bonds. So let's think about inflation. If it rises, then that fixed return from that bond is going to be relatively worth less. So in theory, that means bond prices should fall, therefore pushing up yields and accounting for a real return, which investors will demand above inflation. They're also closely linked to interest rates set by the Bank of England. And I'd actually say interest rates are the key thing when it comes to bond prices, because interest rates are also reacting to inflation. So the interest rate that the bank sets is just the rate at which other banks can deposit money with the Bank of England. It's kind of the floor of returns that you can get off your cash in the economy. And those returns have been passed on to individuals and companies based on the rates that banks can deposit at and based on the rates they want to lend money out in the economy at. So when the Bank of England changes its interest rates, this changes the returns on offer from newly issued bonds. So if that rate rises, then newly issued bonds will have to yield more. And this makes existing bonds that yield less, less appealing. So prices fall to bring yields in line with market rates. Changes to inflation and interest rates have caused bonds prices to fall over the past couple of years. This is what is responsible for higher yields available to investors today, but has caused investors who already held bonds to see their capital value fall.
So looking ahead, Sam, do you expect the dynamic for bonds to change if the next move for interest rates is downwards, which most commentators do expect? So in that environment, if interest rates are cut, in theory, this will cause bond yields to fall and bond prices to rise. Is this arguably a better environment for bonds?
It should be. It's very hard to know what the central bank will do. And we've seen markets price in 3 interest rate cuts this year to now maybe 2 interest rate cuts this year. The stubborn inflation is actually causing people to push back their estimations of when the central bank will cut interest rates. But yeah, I think you're right. When it eventually does happen, or when it's clear that it will happen, then we will see a rally in the bond markets, because interest rates falling, as I said before, good news for bond prices. But it all is hinged on inflation and whether that's under control, and whether the central bank can then step in to stimulate the economy by cutting interest rates. If we see a recession, but there's still very high inflation, then the central bank's going to be more reluctant to step in. If we see a recession with low inflation, and actually the recession causes low inflation, that I think would be really bullish for bonds, and it would allow the governor of the Bank of England to actually say, it's time, we can stimulate the economy without risking higher inflation.
And as well as directly investing in bonds, such as UK gilts, there's lots of other options for investors. You can outsource the bond decision-making to a bond fund manager. Sam, could you give a very quick run through of the different types of options that are out there for investors? Among them is flexible or strategic bond funds. Bond fund managers that manage these funds, they can invest in any bond that they want to invest in. So it could be any type of company, any type of government. Do you think that these are the sort of best options for retail investors?
Yeah, I think before that, it's worth just stressing the difference between buying a gilt or a bond and holding it to maturity and buying a bond fund. If you're buying a gilt and it matures in 6 months or a year or 2 years, and you intend to hold that bond until it matures, you actually don't have to worry about the bond's price. You know it's going to pay you back when it matures and you're going to collect your coupons. That's not true if you're owning a portfolio of bonds managed by a bond fund manager. These portfolios never mature. Even if the bonds mature inside the portfolio, the gains are just reinvested. So you have a constant portfolio of bonds, which is priced daily to the value of those bonds. So actually, you really do have to worry about what happens to the price of those bonds, unlike buying a gilt and holding it to maturity. So what types of bond funds are there? As you said, Carl, strategic bonds, these are the flexible bond funds that can actually go anywhere. They can invest in short bonds or long bonds or emerging market bonds. And there you pay a fund manager to take a view of what's going to happen in markets. And you trust them to try and outsmart other investors and make the right calls about what central banks will do and what inflation will do. These are a good one-stop shop for investors, especially those that might be a bit more worried about where interest rates are heading, and they want a professional fund manager to try and protect them against rising inflation. Another option, and probably another good starting point as well, is just to go for a sterling investment grade bond fund. So these are bond funds investing in bonds issued in pounds that have got an investment grade rating, so above a BBB score, including BBB, set by a credit rating agency. And there's a couple on our rated list. So the ACE 40, so the sustainable option, which is very popular and yields about 5%, is the Rathbone Ethical Bond Fund. And then the Super 60 option we have there at the moment is the Invesco Sterling Bond Fund. You could also look for a higher yielding bond fund, so taking a bit more risk to get a bit more income. These funds behave a little bit more like equity funds. They're a bit more linked to the economic cycle, but you do get a better income there. So one you could look at is the Royal London Global Bond Opportunities Fund. It's part of the Super 60, yields 6.3%, and has about half invested in bonds that are below investment grade, known as high yield or junk bonds.
You've mentioned both investment grade and high yield bonds. The main differences are that investment grade bonds are generally seen as a pretty safe bet, whereas high yield bonds, they are seen as being riskier.
Yeah, exactly. So high yield, you're getting a greater income, but you're taking more risk. And because these bonds are from less creditworthy companies, the health of them is more linked to the economy because there's a higher default chance. So these bond funds will move more in line with equities, whereas the investment grade bond funds are very high quality. It's very unlikely that they're going to default. So actually, these are more of a safe option if the stock market is falling. These actually might be a bit of a safe haven because companies are going to still keep paying back their debt. So you're still going to collect your income payments.
A final thought from me is that while bonds, including gilts, are offering attractive yields at the moment, it's important that investors do not put all their eggs in the bond basket. Instead, it is equities that are the key piece of the jigsaw to grow wealth in real terms over the long term. In Interactive Investor's Super 60 list of fund ideas, we have a handful of UK equity income options that are at the moment yielding 5% or more. Now, equity income funds, they provide dividend growth, which bonds do not deliver because the interest payments are fixed. And it is the growth in income that over the long term protects investors against inflation.
That's right. So bonds are the defensive part of your portfolio. The returns are capped, and if everything goes well, you'll get your principal, you get your coupons, and there's nothing else for you. But like you say, Carl, equities, the upside is unlimited. And if you find the next Amazon, the next Google, you're going to make a lot more money in the equity part of the company, in the shares, than in their bonds.
My thanks to Sam, and thank you for listening to this episode of On The Money. If you enjoyed it, please do leave us a rating or a review and follow the show in your podcast app. And if you get a chance, tell a friend about it too. For more practical pointers on how to get the most out of your investments, check out the Interactive Investor website, which is ii.co.uk, and I'll see you next week.